creativity, hustlers, fakers, and thieves. Creativity is not the province of just a chosen few. Those who fear they have nothing to say or that it's all been said before can also grab the fire. But our ideas about practice, quality, or failure shape our work. New artists, working artists, strugglers, those who have been at it all their lives grapple with these same concepts. This is the heart of our endeavor, finding the different and similar ways that artists work to be creative. On Creativity, Hustlers, Fakers, and Thieves.
Welcome to our podcast on creativity. Ali, how are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm well. I'm very well. I'm talking about subjects that are so interesting to me. And we have a conversation coming up with Lale Karamian in the topic of value, which is, you say, what? What does this have to do with creativity? And then you start to consider it. And these doors open up and you realize, this is a huge topic. My value, or how the market considers my value, how my gallery considers my value, how my readers consider my value. What is value? Does value change? Does my perception of it change? This is a huge topic. Ali, what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, well, this is obviously coming back into that area that we've discussed as problematic for me, because value is sort of another way of looking at meaning and worthwhileness and effort. And one of the things that I've struggled with a lot and discussed here is whether any of this means anything, if there's any real point to the pursuit of craftsmanship and excellence, or why bother. And so
when I just interject and say, absolutely not.
Right.
There's none.
Right. And that's why it's important to do.
Right. It's important to do.
All art is useless, so says Oscar Wilde, right? A painting, and this is something that I'd be very interested in hearing what Lale's take on it is, how do you discern value for something that is inherently valueless, like worthless, insofar as what it does in the world, it has no function other than to be beautiful or inspire or thoughtfulness or whatever. And then you're really struggling because that's all subjective.
Well, there's, I think, something that good artists, creative people do, and that is to pay attention to their intention. You're making a painting, you're building a chair, you're throwing a pot. What are you trying to do with that? But what does it evoke? What does it bring to mind? And a good designer can point a person to a specific spot on a piece and engage them visually, tactily, and then emotionally. But let's go ahead and listen to my chat with Lale and see about her thoughts on value. You're an artist, but are you a textile artist who does film? Are you a sculptor who works with multimedia? How do you describe yourself?
I would describe myself, I'd say at my pillar, at my core, is drawing, painting, and animation, textile, printmaking, the different mediums that I've worked in. They really stem from a necessity or circumstance of one of those main mediums, which would be drawing and painting.
I have a question for you. Do you consider yourself a storyteller with your art?
Yes. Although I've never thought of myself as having a real story to tell, I feel that I'm just actually unveiling story, like revealing stories, or in some way juxtaposing materials and lines and things that seem to reveal something of a story. The best stories already exist. The best stories are existing as we are and have existed. And storytelling is very much part of where I come from in terms of what I want to see or love to see. And I don't necessarily start out with a very set story, but sometimes I'm very much imbued with stories that I am thinking about or inspired by or driven by.
I don't tell a story with any of my furniture, and that's just fine. I have a real sense of what I'm trying to do with it and what I'm trying to evoke with it, but it doesn't involve storytelling like I can see your work doing quite a bit. So that's different. Now, I write stories. They're just different, completely different world. And
they're very separate entities.
Yes, they're absolutely separate.
Don't you feel like they all work? They're all part of you.
I agree with you. They are both a part of me, but they feel like they're in different rooms. They see each other in the hallway, maybe, you know, and they wave at each other, and that's about it. So there's not a lot of communication there. But that's just my work, which brings me to the question of value, because I can tell you how my work was valued, because that's our topic for today's chat. I thought we were going to talk about something completely different, and then this came up. You told me a story, did you not, about being in school and value earlier?
I had a professor in grad school who I had a lot of respect for, still do. They believed that I, or commented while in my studio, that if my work didn't speak about social critique or, like, you know, having like a relevant current social position or message or position and premise, it really had no place. That definitely took me down for a good week or two. I was feeling
that's all? Wow. I mean, you bounced back quick.
Well, I never forgot it. It might have sat with me for a while, but that was in grad school, but it always stuck with me. And I think at some point it empowers you, you know, these kind of things, because you're like, well, wait a minute. If I exist, then there was a point, right? If I exist or I'm an artist, it's an aspect we can all participate in, but I don't think that it made me not an artist. If there's anything I've known about myself from a very young age, it's that I am an artist and that I live for it and I live by it. It's just me. It's me in every ounce of my being. And so that's that. The quality of what I output or the degree of work I put into it or thoughtfulness or how I can judge it and edit it is critical. I always felt I made work from the inside. And obviously I'm informed and absorbed by so many things that I don't know how to talk about directly. And I've never been that sort of an artist. From that time that comment was made, was what, over maybe 20 years ago. There was a different shift and trend. There was a much bigger platform for work that was of that kind of critique. And I think things shift and pendulums move and whatnot. And yes, right now there's definitely more of a space for the kind of themes or things about my work as it is for women, for example, opening up and the visibility is changing in many aspects, as we know. Yeah, I was too ingrained in a part of me to let that happen.
That's courageous. That's all I can say. I didn't have that same courage. I had some experiences at my college with my writing, because that's mm-hmm. what I thought I was going to be, was a writer. And I just got shut down. And I shut down. After the critiques, I just said, I guess I'm not going to do this. And having the courage, as you showed, is a remarkable thing to say, yeah, well, I hear what you're saying and I agree or disagree and I'm continuing to do this work. That's a big deal. Which brings me back to this idea of value. Why don't I place that same value on my work that you placed on yours? And that's impossible to answer. That's an impossible question. But I think you're really fortunate to have pushed through that. I mean, you can remember it as a touchstone, as a turning point, perhaps, not as an obstacle. So how do you find that value in your own work, I guess, or in yourself?
Since discovering art or creativity in my mid-teens, I think that was the one thing one very consistent thing I valued and felt confident about from a young age. And maybe I didn't think of it as a thing of quality. I knew I had to aspire to it. I knew I had to grow and become better and push through the things. But I felt that it was so solid. It's just something I never doubted. You know, we all have those where we're like, especially when the world feels like that. It's really, really, you see horrible things around you and you're like, what am I doing that is possibly helping? You know, I sit in my tunnel, in the studio, and I'm doing this. And like, how am I doing anything? I don't know any artists who don't have those days, but I have felt pretty solid about this. Maybe because it was just mine and it was mine to have. And it was my secret, that thing that was wholeheartedly mine. And that meant a lot to me. That gave me so much by way of confidence and drive. So I think I've always felt in a way I had something to say, even though I don't particularly feel I have anything to say. I feel like I'm there to reveal somehow.
Here's the question about value that I have. Who gets to ascribe value to a piece of art? The artist, the critic, the audience, the collector, your mom? Who? That's a very tough one. Just think about art just as this concept. And who gets to?
I guess it's depends where you're starting from. We're talking about personal value, we're talking about recognition. You know, you have an exhibition, people like, how did it go? Was it successful? Well, what exactly are we talking about? Are we talking about
what
sales?
Does that mean?
Are we talking about how many people came to the opening? You talk about reviews. Are we talking about did it lead to something else? You know, there are so many aspects that could signify success. Then there's also how do I feel about the work?
Is success of equal to value? That's another question.
Not always.
No, I don't think so. And there are artists who put out work and they go, oh, this is shit. And people love it, right? Where's the value there? I mean, that's just confusion. You know, your audience loves the stuff and you hate it, but you make money off it and everybody loves it, loves you at the gallery, but you, the artist, don't like it. So how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully you're making things that you want to be making. You know, we all have better periods than others, or works that we feel are leading to another. You know, we all, in the hindsight, see, we'll go, oh man, that was actually, I thought that was great at the time, but that just led to this, which was really something, another step, you know, to something else. I don't know, like these days, I've had a lot going on, and my only output of making has been literally at night after my child goes to bed and I fall asleep and I wake up in the middle of the night and I do drawings at my desk. They just feel like skeletons of things to come, you know, but for me, they're like my lifeline right now. They're like, they mean so much to my connection to making, you know, that I miss because I'm not able to be in the studio as much as I'd like to.
Think about this idea of value. It's so layered, but it's something that each new artist has to face when their work doesn't sell. And you have to face yourself and say, okay, so what am I doing here? That's tough because, you know, there's this need for the artist to feel like they're doing something of value, right? Oh, here's that word again, of value to the world for themselves. And then no one likes it or they like it and the artist doesn't like it. And so it makes value, it's kind of a very shiftable target, I guess.
Maybe I've been fortunate. I've typically worked with people gallery-wise that have always supported what I was doing and didn't try to direct or have an influence on what I was going to make. That's always felt pretty good. I think that it's true that sales are, you know, like driven aspect of how a gallery has to run. It's a business. And that's one thing that I accept about it. However, I have also had experience of having my career drop out from under me at least twice or three times, having to build rebuild my whole career because of personal circumstances. You know, these are all things that really made it more challenging and to pick myself back up, pick everything back up and reemerge and think about what I was going to do or how, you know, whether I was just going to make work for, well, you're continuing to make, but the outlets are not there. The sales are not happening or the support is not necessarily there. And those are all decisions that I never knew how to make. This is a big critical thing about grad school now is art school is how they do not prepare you for the world. And it is absolutely true, you know, and they do not prepare you to have financial strategy. It was just implied that there was one way to go about it, one way to go about a career, which was, you know, being well-known or having a big gallery. And there are many ways. And I think that there's some things that are really wonderful about how people can make industries out of their own niche and, you know, business and thrive, you know, from things that they make. But yeah, I mean, I've had some give up moments. I really lost a lot of faith in what I was doing, even being able to have an artistic practice and kind of gave up for a while and made a very conscious decision to give up doing it. And I was like, that's what I need right now. And that's what I'm going to do. It was like a 5-year dip. It ended up being a really wonderful learning experience for me that I cannot get away from being an artist, no matter what. And that quest, is it for, I don't know if it, I'm going to say some really like blanket words here, but like quest for love and God and the discovery through a material can create and bring about was above everything and worth whatever that path was. And I valued that. That was a particular moment of where self-worth, which I think does come down to value, was very compromised in my mind. But I had to go through that to learn more about myself.
And it's a tough time to be in one's career and then doubt everything that you've been doing and take a step back and reevaluate it, understand the ramifications of that choice. If one chooses to live a creative life, there can be repercussions and joys. I think that's the quest you talk about is real. I don't know about the tags you put on it. Mine are different, but it's an important part of being alive for me. And then you have to stay alive. That's different.
Yeah.
That's a completely different set of tasks. But I think what you were talking about, how working with fabric was safe and made you comfortable. Yeah. That's what the woodshop is for me. I can shut out the crazy world. Just get away from me. I have work to do and I can make something and I can create an object. But the object itself is really of no importance to me. It's what's happening with me, within me, as I'm creating that object. That's really of the utmost value. It's good to have something at the end of, you know, several weeks of work and say, here is your piece. It's a nourishment that occurs, I think. Well, I was just thinking about this, how stuff gets valued in the marketplace. I had a piece one time, it was a blanket chest, and it was kind of an experiment for me. And it was a nice piece, and it was in a Seattle gallery. And I was talking with my friend, and I said, well, you know, this piece is, you know, it's not selling. And he said, well, it's not worth it. I said, your pardon? What do you mean it's not worth it? He said, well, it's not worth it. The market is telling you that it's not worth it. I'm like, God. And so I had to really sit back and think about that. And he was right. That's a tough pill to swallow, but it's also an educational one. You say, okay, now do I change what I do to please this market? Or do I adjust how I think about the market? Do I pander to it? Do I ignore it? Got to stay alive. So there are all these issues that pop up with that, you know, simple statement.
That might be true if market changes, but you know the value of your work. I mean, you ultimately do.
Here's one of the lessons I learned from it. I control how someone engages with one of my pieces of furniture. You have to direct the person where you want them to go. It's just like a writer or a playwright or something. You know, you're carrying them along in a certain way. You're not letting them go wherever they want. You want the path laid out. You want the breadcrumbs to be pretty, not obvious, but there so people can have a sense of discovery and yet you're in charge. That being said, I also think that coming up with something that people recognize as you is important. So when they see one of Lale's pieces, they say, ah, that's one of hers. I think it's a kind of familiarity, or, you know, a recognizable look or pulse or something where you can fit it in to your, you know, memory or sense of what an artist is about.
At heart, all I want to do is paint. that's all I really want to do. But I gravitate to these different things because there's a necessity. You know, something is calling for that thing to be made in that way. And anytime I did work in another medium, I taught myself how to do it because the message was there, the images were there, or the impulse was there.
So with your drawing, do you have to practice every day to feel connected to it?
I think everything is a practice, especially painting. You can never go away from it in your being. And maybe that's the aspect of the uncomfortable God comment, you know, like tag or God aspect is like a real sense of connecting with myself or something higher. That medium can bring when I can experience while working. I don't think there's any superficial thing it could be. It's just somewhere where we can connect with a deeper part of ourselves or like channel. And that may not mean that we can really go there or we have the time to go there or that, you know, that it's the space, but just something that checks in and recognizes that magnificent cavern in ourselves.
Creativity, hustlers, fakers, and thieves. Which do you consider you yourself?
I relate to the first and the third word very much. I feel like just the life of an artist is very much a hustling one. And thieves, I mean, that's how we discover who we are, is by being different people that we want to be. Especially in my learning process, anytime I'm learning or earlier on in my, you know, phases of development as an artist, I constantly was stealing or being other people. Maybe I was a faker too. And I tell my students this a lot. I'm like, you gotta steal because it's gonna help you know who you are. You know, and I can see that they're like worried about it not being them or them not having their style. And I'm like, fuck style. You know, like style comes, like, you know, that is not what you should be worried about or concerned with.
No, I think you have to dip your toes into lots of different waters to find, you know, where it is you're going to land. And you can't just have one influence. You've got to have 100. I am all three. I'm a hustler, faker, and a thief. I want to thank you so much for talking with me today, Lale. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. This has been great. I appreciate talking with you and been honored to be here.
Oh, no, the honor. The honor was strictly mine. Ali, if you have some thoughts to share with me, I'd love to.
I do. So it's interesting that you don't think of yourself as a storyteller when it comes to your furniture. I certainly do. I think of it in the way that a story, like rhetorically speaking, where every piece of furniture is persuading you to behave in a certain way with it and what that brings to the fray of fabrication, you know, the context. And that's maybe why I don't think of my furniture necessarily as art, because I'm a little bit too much into that sort of Oscar Wildean notion that art is useless. But then again, you know, one of those Maloof music stands is an art because a violinist could use it. Well, I'm sure it's difficult. It's difficult to make these hard and fast lines. So it's fun to listen to you guys try to do that with concepts of like value and who assigns value and what it is, you know, in terms of storytelling.
Well, what's the answer to that question? Can a piece of furniture be a piece of art?
I mean, I guess it depends on what your definition of art is. You know, I'm like looking at a couple of your stools in the back and I'm just like, well, they're really beautiful stools. Is it art? I don't know. Maybe there's greater intrinsic value to something functional than something useless that's decorative or aesthetic. Maybe.
Well, you could put it in the box called design, but I don't think that minimizes its effect on people. And as you say, if there is a story being told, which I would argue that point, if there's a response to the piece, then I think it's functioning very much as a piece of art.
Yeah. It's a question, you know, like, are you trying to sell it? Are you trying to buy it? Are you trying to feel good about it? You know, who approves it? As you said, is it the critic? Is it the person who's looking at it? The person who made it? The person who put it up on the wall? Nobody? Don't know.
Value is a tough one because there's so many points of view or points of reference on which we can expect a value judgment. I have to value my time. I have to value my design. There's some things that come into play there. And yet there are certain things that come off my bench and I go, well, that's not my best work.
Right.
And so it's easy to say, okay, so that just doesn't have as much value. I think the most interesting part of that conversation, though, was her response to it. How she didn't take it personally and didn't sublimate that rejection, because there's a certain amount of rejection in that criticism, and just said, okay, yeah, that's a point of view, and I'm going to move on from there.
Well, I think that might have been like the bigger lesson that she was getting there. That might have been just a great opportunity for her to learn something about, you know, a critical part of the career of an artist, you know, is that rejections, that hard criticism, are hearing things about your work that you're just not going to want to hear. That congruency between the person, you know, the creator and the creation is really bizarre and very difficult to avoid.
So I think that understanding of one's own value is so important for an artist, for a creator, to say, yeah, doesn't matter. I hear what you're saying. I can maybe assimilate some part of that into my work, but I can also move past it and keep working on my stuff. Such an interesting conversation with Lale on value and how we find its importance in our lives. Who gets to place it? How do we? Oh, it's a tough one. This is our last podcast of our first season. It has been an absolutely fascinating journey that Ali pushed me to travel on with him. And I'm very grateful for that. There's much more to talk about. And I hope we'll continue on with the second season. Ali, thank you.
Thank you, Gary. It's been a real pleasure being able to speak to these conversations and participate with you in this exploration. It's been a real adventure. We've learned a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening and thinking. That's the fun part. Thank you all for tuning in. This has been Gary Rogowski with Creativity, Hustlers, Fakers, and Thieves. Which one are you?